It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Analyst Jeremiah Ouyang joins us. We're going to talk about the Nexus 7 and a bunch of other Google hardware and software. Stay tuned. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 154, recorded July 11th, 2012. What's your glass number? This Week in Google is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com now. Click the radio microphone and enter Twig. That's Stamps.com. Use the offer code Twig. And by Ford, featuring the My Ford Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. And by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at Ting.com/twig. It's time for This Week in Google, the show that covers not just Google. It's This Week in Google Plus. No, that's not right either. It's This Week in Google and other stuff. The cloud, Facebook, you know, that kind of thing. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Gina Trapani of smarterword.org.
So happy to be here, to be back after the July 4th holiday. I can't wait to talk about the Nexus 7.
Ooh.
Talk about
it. Is that what you have right there in your hot little hand?
Ooh. Yes. Ooh. Yes. Ooh. Love it. We'll talk about it. I'm excited. We didn't get to talk about it last week.
You're making Jeff Jarvis jealous.
Very, very jealous.
From buzzmachine.com.
I agree. I am so happy to be back, my friends. 2 weeks without Twig is like a half a month without sunshine.
Wow, I feel good.
It was an eternity.
That's great. Look who else is here. And guess what he brought? Jeremiah Ouyang is here.
Hey, guys. It's nice
analyst
to be back.
From webstrategist.com.
I brought my Google Glass. We'll talk about that.
Oh, I'm 747. I got you beat.
And I brought the Google Pokemon Ball.
Yeah. And the Chrome box, the Chromebook. And it looks like you might have a Nexus 7 somewhere in that stack of tablets
over
there.
We got a couple toys.
So this is good. We will talk a little bit about the hardware from Google I/O, which we didn't. We kind of did a quick review on Before You Buy, but we really, on this show, we haven't had a chance to talk about it at all. Quick promo later today, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. Nolan Bushnell will be our guest on Triangulation, the man who created Atari and Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theater. I guess we should start with the stuff, the swag pile. I did a little calculation, $1,125 worth of stuff at Google I/O. It included, it's a net loss, though, if you bought the glasses. So it included a Google Nexus phone. That's nice. Do you have your Nexus?
No, I didn't bring that.
We've seen it. Yeah, it came out in November. A Nexus 7 tablet.
Yep.
Got right that here. Right there. It included a Q, $300 Q.
The orb.
And the orb.
Or a bocce ball, whatever you like to do with it.
It's heavy.
It's very heavy.
And a Samsung Chrome box, which is, of course, basically a Mac Mini, but it runs Chrome OS. So that's $1,125 worth of stuff. But then, if you queued up, as apparently you did, to buy the Google Glasses, which will be delivered next year, you get this. A solid piece of glass with a number
no
on
AR
it.
In it.
That's it. Where's mine? Where do we put it?
What was Scoble's number?
he tweeted it was sub 200 or something like that.
Oh, of course.
You had to get in line, right, Gina, to get it?
And in fact, I didn't even get one of those. I didn't even get a number. I was so late that it was kind of like the last day, and I kind of go back and forth about
but
it.
You so did, but you did put down $1,500.
Yes, I did. I pre-ordered. I did.
Now, we don't have to pay until they actually deliver these.
Right.
Look at
but
this.
I didn't get one of those, so I don't even know.
737. So this
nice.
Is the new geek status symbol, isn't it, Jeremiah? What's
what are you trying
number?
To say? What are you trying to say there?
I just want to say I'm a 200 better than you.
Forget clout. What's your glass
What's your glass number? Forget your clout number. What's your glass number? So actually, this really is the fool index, because $1,500...
That's a lot for a product that doesn't even exist.
What do you think under the product?
Indicates how fast you ran to spend $1,500 on a prototype.
What a sucker we are. The lower the number, the bigger the sucker.
You know what? Surprisingly, I haven't seen any Google Glass on eBay yet. I keep on watching every week to see who's going to put it up.
I guess you could sell your number, huh?
You could probably sell the product. You bought it, right? I didn't read the terms of service that curve.
I haven't seen the terms of service. But the point is, we do want to be able to review it for This Week in Google. I'm sure you want to review it.
Someone asked how I justified it to my wife. This is a part of my job.
And Gina and I are going to conspire about that later.
Yes, we are.
I'm going to live vicariously through Gina and use my foundation money to do it.
I love it.
Yeah, I got connections.
So I love this because Jeremiah is wearing a Google Buzz shirt. Was Buzz killed?
Who killed the Buzz?
Who killed the Buzz? Did Buzz get... if I go to buzz.google...
I'm pretty sure it has been retired probably over a year before Google Plus.
Oh, look, I'm getting a answer.py script. A sure sign that something's dead. So Buzz has been replaced by Plus. iGoogle is going away. That kind of surprised me, but I guess nobody
does. But I never liked it much.
I used it.
It was so Yahoo-y.
Well, it was a portal, right?
It was a portal.
It's a poor man's feed reader, right? It's an easy feed reader.
Not at all. Oh. So here's my iGoogle. You can put these little widgets on here. I've got the weather. I've got my Google Calendar. A little Wolf from Alpha search. I've got stock markets. I've got maps. And yes, here's the reader part. But I loved this, the how-to of the day. So these are all little modules that you can put in here.
It should have been an Android page on the web.
Well, this
technology is very 2007.
It's my Yahoo. It's what my Yahoo was.
It was my Yahoo, exactly. Back in 2006, Lifehacker readers loved iGoogle. They loved it. There was another one, NetVibes, that was really popular.
Love NetVibes. Is that still around?
Yeah, but, you know, people just don't surf the web this way anymore.
It's because we've changed now. We don't look at these, what do you call it, smorgasbord? We consume things through feeds.
No, that's the problem. You're calling it a smorgasbord. I call it a dashboard. That's hip. Dashboard is hip. Smorgasbord is like Perry's Smorgy. $9.99, all you can eat.
I know we'll get to this later, but I was really, really struck by the iPad version of Google Plus and how different it is.
It's so gorgeous. Actually, I'm having people get me things today. Could you get me my iPad? Because I do want to show people this. This is quite gorgeous. So Google shutdowns. This is the Larry Page tsunami. iGoogle. Google Video. iGoogle, by the way, in November, right? Google Video. They've been warning me about this for a while, saying, you have videos. Would you please move them over?
Right.
What's Google Mini? I don't even know what Google Mini is.
Wasn't that the box? Wasn't that the search appliance?
Search appliance.
So they have another search appliance, so that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Presumably, you're using the other search appliance if you're...
But this is all normal in a company that's constantly innovating and changing things. They try things out in the 20 to 30% of the R&D time. They shut them down if it doesn't work. I think that's actually a brilliant model rather than forcing it. But I get these cool shirts. They're on the third iteration of social now, right?
And it makes that shirt so much more valuable that it's...
You want to buy it?
Yes. Where'd you get a Google Buzz shirt?
I'll trade you numbers. I don't know. I probably got it at one of the...
Wait a minute. If I gave you my number for your number, my lower number, would you give me that shirt?
Not on air.
You're not wearing anything underneath. I'm not giving you my tech TV shirt because that's even more obsolete. Yeah, I agree, Jeremiah. You shut things down. We do it here. We cancel shows after a while, and we bring in new shows. That's just part of – it's called – you know, it's being a good gardener.
So I wonder which one of these hardware devices are going to get shut down here.
Okay. Take a guess. Okay, let's go. Okay, Gina, we've got a Chrome box, but let's say Chrome OS.
Okay.
We've got a Google Q. We've got Google Glass. We've got a Nexus 7, and we've got a Galaxy Nexus phone. Which will be the first to die?
The first to die relative to its launch, because Glass isn't going to be out for a while. Is that what we're saying?
Oh, that's a good point. Well, you could leave Glass out.
Point.
Well, the Q.
Yeah. Pretty obvious, right? Yeah. Any dissension here?
No. That is definitely going away.
I think it already went away. I think it was stillborn.
Can you buy it now?
Yes, play.google.com.
I haven't heard a single person say, ooh, I got my cue.
No.
I wonder who actually made this. Let's see if we can find the real.
It's made in the USA. That was one. It's one recommending point. Here's what's wrong with it. If it were $99 or $89, I don't think we'd be disparaging it, right? It's $300 is the problem.
Yeah, the price tag is the problem. It seems like the Q is more of a proof of concept of the Android at home stuff than an actual product they expected people to buy for multiple rooms of their house. And I got to say, the Q, it's cool. I liked it. I like playing around with it.
Well, it's pretty.
I would never have bought it. It's pretty. It's interesting. I like sending songs to it. I had a couple of friends over, all with Android phones. We were sending YouTube videos to it, which is something we normally do, but we generally like pass around the tablet. It's kind of cool to do that on TV, but it's way too expensive and way too limited.
And you're assuming you like your friend's music.
Well, it's right. Kind of annoying because your friend could actually take over the playlist, right? You could have a music fight.
Oh, yeah, those never go well.
Yeah, those
especially at Chuck E. Cheese.
That's definitely a way to lose friends. So I'm going to have a hypothesis here because I'm on the site. Ships soon. This is play.google.com. Ships in 1 to 2 weeks. And you can order up to two of them. Now, remember, the idea of this is if you really want to use it, you need one for every room, right? Because they kind of, it's like, it's distributed. So the fact that you can only order two tells me they didn't make very many. And that tells me that they're never going to make any more. That this is, so it's, I think, from that, I deduce this is already dead.
Yep, I agree. I mean, yeah, Google's look at the shotgun spread of products they launched. I mean, that is the Google model. Shotgun spread.
Shotgun.
No, but Jeremiah, you just said kind of it's changed. That was the model. But then Larry has been trying to focus the company with a laser. And this is an odd one.
Two lasers.
But it doesn't show the kind of focus that I think that he has wanted to bring. Unless they said we're going to have a whole panoply of products. Now, the other way around it is that I can't wait. We talked about the 7, but it's fascinating that no one made a decent Android tablet until Google made one. And maybe with Motorola and all that, they have to be in the business of making demonstration products.
That'd be a different strategy. Microsoft clearly thinks that. They're making the Surface because nobody has made or shown a Windows RT tablet that's in the least bit compelling.
But I don't know where the big business is. But then Gene is right, I think. What they're trying to do is do demonstration of what's possible.
It's a reference platform. Well, this isn't a reference platform because they don't want other people to make anything like this, but they want them to make Android-based media
appliances.
Devices.
They're trying to figure out how do we get the Google experience in front of the audiovisual setup in your living room. And that.
But ironically, that doesn't even do this. This doesn't even do that. You have to have an Android device.
Right.
To use this. So if I have a Samsung Galaxy S3 with DLNA, I don't even need this. I could do everything that the Q does with my phone right to my TV. I don't need this thing. The only thing this offers that my Samsung Galaxy S does not is a 25-watt amplifier. That's a little pricey.
Right, to get up to the best speakers of the house. This just seemed like an Android. You know, last year Google I.O., they announced Android at Home, which is the idea of having, you know, appliances with Android built in that can... They can do.
Didn't it look NFC, like this, though? NFC. Remember when they waved a CD over something and it looked kind of like this?
Yeah, it did.
Well, that's right.
What was it called?
Right.
It was a device, Android-powered device hub called Tungsten.
This might be Tungsten.
Embedded, so RFID embedded into CD cases. The device was able to detect the CD and add it to your library, right? So you would wave the CD over the device. So I think that this is, it seems like the Nexus Q is just Google's way of saying, like, here's a way you could do it. At home.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's, you know, it's cool. It's got 29 LEDs in a ring.
It looks very pretty.
The top spins, and that's the volume control, which I really like.
That's cool.
So, like, while you're listening to something, you can and you can tap your, you can touch it, or not even really tap it, you just touch it to pause. So it's like, it's neat. It's not anything I would have ever spent $300 on.
It's a conversation piece in front of your TV, and then it becomes a doorstop.
Well, on the rundown, I put up something, and since you guys were at iOS and I wasn't, there was the Android device kit. Have you seen this thing? It looks like an odd phone.
Android device
under
kit.
The last link under Android, Android accessory development kit.
Hmm.
I thought this was something that they did at iOS. It's really kind of neat. It's a device that has tons of sensors in it.
Ooh. And this I want.
Try to get people to think about using Android with more kinds of devices.
So they announced this at Google I.O. I didn't hear anything about it. The ADK.
No, that wasn't announced at I.O. I'm pretty sure that was not.
An update to the ADK they announced at Google I.O. Comes out of the... I want this. This I would get. Why didn't they offer this?
Get a load of it. It has all these sensors on it and stuff.
It has a working alarm clock and audio dock that's compatible with your Android devices.
Something like that, right?
Oh, how do I get this?
I wasn't at this session.
How do I get this?
This is interesting because what this does is say it tries to get people to think about new ways to use Android, new ways to connect. The notion of all the... I think that the sensor world is going to be the next, you know, kind
I
of
agree.
Wacky fad for a few months, right? But we'll have fun with that. And so it has Pico... Let me see. Get Hackers some possible uses of the kit.
It's Arduino. It's based on Arduino.
Pico satellite... hotel room alarm, irrigation controller, motorized remote control, drapes, smart thermostat, egg timer with atmospheric pressure compensation.
That's awesome.
Data launch weather station. And did I mention robots? Really fun to see what people build. Now, this is something for developers. Right?
And there were a lot of robots at I.O. this year. And drones.
And you've seen the $99 Kickstarter project for an Android gaming device.
Right.
In fact, I should check how that status of that is, because they launched a couple of days ago and they'd already raised something like $100,000 in the first couple of days. What is the name of that? It's like the Ohuno or something. Anybody got a name?
The Ouya.
Ouya. Ouya. Ouya.
Link is in the chat.
Is it a new kind of video game console? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
How much have they raised?
They wanted $950,000. They've got $3.3 million. In 2 days.
And it's incredible. Open.
It's Android.
Which is what the Orb should be, which is what Google TV should be.
Well, Google's got to be happy about this. This is exactly what they're talking about.
Why isn't Google putting out... I mean, yes, this is exactly what they want.
I think because Google doesn't want to. They want people to do this. They've got 22,228 backers who pledged $100 to get one.
$100 is nothing.
I know. I should have done this. They're sold out of, like, half these packages.
Did you get a Pebble, too? Did you order that?
I ordered a Pebble.
That's Android.
This is amazing. 3.3 million. Yeah, Pebble's Android, although they're going to make it work with iOS as well. So that's intriguing. I don't know what that means. So this is very similar to this. I want this open accessory protocol kit. Where do I get the kit?
You know, Leo.
That's what I... Forget that. I'll trade you a Q for an ADK.
I think, let me just go off on a limb here. I think that the Twit Network should have a contest for creating, forget these hackathons and stuff, for creating products and things around that kit.
Oh.
With a panel of prize
judges.
All right, deal. Well,
the prize is recognition from Leo the King.
No, do you guys, are you willing to serve as judges?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right, I got a panel of four judges.
Sure.
Let me put together a prize fund. We should have a prize fund, right?
Yeah, we don't need to do much, I don't think.
$1,000.
Glory is enough.
$1,000 from Jeff.
$1,000.
The prize would be to come on Twit and demo the thing.
And you get to demo it?
Yeah.
Oh, I know what the prize is. Jeremiah's cue.
And Leo's glass.
No, I'm not giving you my glass. How about if we give you your very own Nexus Q? That's just mean.
And a wave t-shirt to the runner-up.
It's a deal. We're going to figure that out. We'll do it like, Shark Tank, where you get to come on and you present.
Oh, yeah.
And the four judges. We'll do special edition of Twig with that.
It's a developer.android.com/tools/ADK.
Yes, but I don't see the hardware.
There's no link to get the hardware that I can see.
Well, that's what I want.
I know.
I'm supposed to build that thing?
No.
I'm not that good. I'm not a hardware hacker. I'm a software hacker. I want the hardware so I can hack it.
Yep.
It's based on Arduino, which is kind of cool. I'll figure it out. I'm going to get one of those. But so what are we proposing, Jeff?
I'm not sure. Does it need to be a working prototype?
Yes.
You got to see something. Yeah, it just can't be PowerPoint. Something.
Or do, even, or even do if it's just a, if it's just a board, it doesn't have to be pretty. It's showing a concept of a new way to think about using Android as an open platform on a
device. And now thanks to the chat room who has sent me to adafruit.com, which is a really great site for this kind of stuff. And they have a variety of ADK development boards.
Oh.
So,
oh, yeah, that's true.
This is for $76 as an example. It's the Arduino Mega Android Accessory Development Kit. It's just a little board. It's got a USB connector on it.
It's $75, yeah.
It's 54 digital I.O. pins, 14 of which can be used as PWM outputs, 16 analog inputs, 4 UARTs, a 16 megahertz crystal oscillator, power and ISCSP header, and a reset button. Wow. Now we're going to, you know, and then there's a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot. This is an exciting arena. If I were a young person.
But you are.
So, Gina, you, Ms., my software development queen.
Yes.
Yes.
Have you often wanted to make hardware? You want to work with it. You want to, you know, you ordered your last and all that. But have you ever dreamed of making hardware stuff?
You know, I've been more of a software person than hardware. I mean, I really appreciate hardware hacking. I appreciate the gadgets that have great design, but I've never been like a huge gadget person. I've always wanted to make software, like, especially with touchscreens, you know, where the software really kind of renders the interface. Like that was super exciting to me. So yeah, I seem to have a block. Like with software APIs, I can imagine things and I can see different apps and things.
There's no limitation.
With hardware, I think maybe it's just because I'm not as just familiar with the landscape. I have a harder time kind of imagining what's possible. And, you know, something like, well, if every CD in your collection has an RFID chip in it, it's like, what? You know, that's the kind of thing that would shut me down. But you know, I think it's the kind of thing where you really have to kind of imagine a future where, you know, everybody kind of has these, you know, these things where things are enabled. RFID or NFC enabled, and I think it's really kind of a bet toward the future. Even the Q, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think the Nexus Q app runs on anything higher than Ice Cream Sandwich.
No, that's not true. According to the website, it's gingerbread or better.
Oh, it's gingerbread or better. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's good. But it's one of those things that like you really have to look toward the future. And I'm just like, I don't know. Maybe it's my ego. I need to make stuff that people can use now. You know, that people can deploy out to their browsers or their phones. I think I got spoiled by web development. You know, you put it out and it works. But
Gina, I have a question for you. But yeah. With Google Glass coming, it's like devices are on our bodies all the time. You have to factor in that form function. I mean, you're a developer. How are you going to adjust to that? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a similar thing to when smartphones became a lot more ubiquitous. I never thought that I would make native mobile web app or apps. I always thought I would just make web apps. But, you know, when it became that I had the smartphone in my pocket all the time and it was a device that I loved, I started developing for it. I'm very much a kind of scratch your own itch kind of developer, you know, if I want something. So if I get the glasses and I love them and I'm dying to see something in my heads up display that hasn't been built yet, mm-hmm. I'll build it.
That's what's so great about software.
Yeah.
You just, you can, you know, and that's, I'm with you, Gina. Software is infinitely malleable.
Yeah.
It's cool to be a hardware hacker and you need them.
But I agree that these chips and this wearable technology is going to be everywhere. Oh, yeah. It's going to be a lot more ubiquitous, just the way that I never dreamed that we would have, you know, computers in our pockets the way that we do now.
The only downside about the software is that you are dependent upon whatever platform you're going to build on.
Absolutely.
And we've been hearing that happen a lot with Facebook, Twitter.
And models. You know what Alan Kay said, if you really care about software, you have to do hardware. But that's not an individual. Yeah, that's not an individual.
Is there a Raspberry Pi? Is the thing you showed, is there a Raspberry Pi for Android? Is that what you showed, that Arduino thing?
No, that's not a Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi is a $30 Linux box, basically.
Is there an equivalent for Android?
Let me just check if you can run the ADK.
A simple little card that will run the Android operating system that you can just kind of plug into.
I would bet that you could put the ADK on Raspberry Pi. It's a GNU Linux box, but... I would bet. And see, that's what's interesting. And from a Google's point of view, of course, Google is ultimately not a hardware house either. And but they want to facilitate hardware development. And that's why the ADK is so smart. And if you're somebody like Gina or you're interested in technology, you should look. That would be a very good skill, I think, going forward to know that.
So let's talk about to have a team. Right. I mean, in my world, I have content people who obviously have to be tied with technology people. You almost wonder if you need if you see more labs popping up with software and hardware people together.
Right, and we're seeing the growth of hardware devices emerging on Kickstarter. So people are, and that traditionally we've seen the web startups and before that media. But let's talk about Google and why all this hardware push. So my whole thesis, and I want to hear from you guys, is that it's just about getting Google experience everywhere in the world. And this is why it's a shotgun approach. They're going to put the hardware everywhere so they can capture the world. And as and let me translate, capture the world means organizing the world's information so you can sell ads against it. That's really all about what this is. Google experience everywhere, monetize it. What do you think?
Absolutely, no doubt.
I'm sorry, I'm busy ordering 80K. Here's the IO. The mint. It goes in a little mint box. Portable.
Yeah, that thing is cool. Anything in a mint box.
It is cool.
Jeremy, you said that you thought that they didn't emphasize the Google Plus announcements as much, kind of for this reason.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Remember about a year ago?
Wait a minute. Let's not talk about it. Let's take a break. Then when we come back.
All right.
We've talked about hardware. Let's talk about Google Plus, why it wasn't more of Google I.O. But first, we got a great panel, by the way. Jeremiah Ouyang is joining us right now. Gina Trapani, of course, from San Diego, and Jeff Jarvis from CUNY. He went home because the network was all borked. Good excuse to go home early.
Oh, I was rushing my little butt
Thank
off.
You. Thank you, Jeff.
It takes a minimum of an hour and a half to get home.
Is that on the train?
Hour 40. No, it's trains, planes, automobiles. I love the And I know it takes you a minute and a half to get home.
I love my commute. 500 steps, I counted.
I hate you.
500 steps. That's good.
Yeah. Well, it could have been better. I could have lived in the basement here, but they wouldn't let me.
Not a lot of windows down there.
Fire marshal wouldn't let me. I got a beanbag. I just need a shower. I want to invite you to start using your time more effectively, spend less time at the post office. How about if your commute to the post office were zero steps? What about that, huh? To buy, not just to buy stamps, but to prepare shipping. What if you're an eBay seller? An Amazon seller. A big part of your job, right, is getting that package ready for shipping, getting the right postage, filling out the forms, all of that. Stamps.com, baby. This is the way to do it. If you're a small business, if you do any, you know, any amount of shipping, actually, I know a lot of home users really like Stamps.com just because you don't have to buy postage anymore. You print your own postage from your computer and your printer. You can print it right on the envelope. You can have your own logo. It really looks professional. It looks sweet. You could print on packages. You could, if you want, little stickies. You could print sticky stamps, too. It's all from Stamps.com. You don't need a postage meter. You don't need special ink. You just need Stamps.com. Now, here's the deal. Is that the video there we're going to show? We can show the video real quickly. This is a happy Stamps.com user. So the idea is actual customers talking about actual Stamps.com. The cool thing is the post office loves you. They love you. They love stamps.com so much. It's not like over their dead body kind of thing. They love it. They give you discounts you cannot get at the post office on express and priority mail. If you're doing international postage, which is usually a pain, not only can it print international postage, it will fill out the forms for you. Same thing with Amazon and eBay sellers. It'll take the data right from the website. Now, here's a special no-risk trial offer. Go to stamps.com. Click that radio microphone. They got one of those classic old microphones in the upper right-hand corner. Use the offer code TWIG. Twig. That way we get, Jeff and Gina get credit. TWIG. Now, suddenly, that $80 no-risk trial is $110. You get $55 in postage coupons you can use over a few month period. You get a free digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling for the scale. It's $5. You get a supply kit and a month free trial, a $110 offer, but only when you use the offer code TWIG. Go to stamps.com right now. Try it out. I tell you, you're going to really like this. By the way, you don't even have to go to the post office to mail stuff. Even if it's over 13 ounces. You know, post 9/11, they have a rule that if it's a package over 13 ounces, you have to bring it in for inspection to the post office. Not when you use stamps.com. The mail carrier comes, takes it to the post office. You can either have your regularly scheduled pickup or you can schedule a free pickup. Post office, I'm telling you, they love this. It lets them close down branches. It lets them eliminate clerks because people just do it themselves. It's just like the internet. Stamps.com. Try it today. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIG. We thank you in advance. So, Google I.O., you were there, Gina, and Jeremiah was there, brought some tools back. They, you know, Vic got on stage, was interrupted by Larry, but he got on stage. He talked about Google Plus, right? They showed a nice video of
they did.
Happy people.
I really think that the focus at Google has changed. About a year ago, Leo, they said, everything's focused around Google Plus. We want to be a social company. They're even putting their bonus structure around that. You saw the focus at I.O. They talked about it a very small amount. People were expecting a platform, an API.
Right.
There wasn't a lot actually available for people. There was very few announcements.
Now, I thought the history API was kind of cool. Gina and I were talking about that.
But that's just a way to get content into Google Plus. Right. So when people arrive and their real friends aren't there, that it looks populated. That's not really Google content.
That's kind of...
I think it's too soon to argue that there's a shift just because what they showed at one conference. I think it's they're not that fickle. This is important to their strategy. It's about more than just a few things. They haven't figured out how to do an API and not ruin Google Plus. It goes back to what I've said on the show before about the problem with email. When it becomes sender controlled, it gets ruined. If Google Plus gets spammed with, you know, my Twitter feed,
that's what happened to Buzz.
As Buzz did, I don't think they have figured out how to do an API, not technologically, but structurally, socially, architecturally. And I think that's the issue. Yeah, I want one too, but I also don't want Google Plus ruined because I do kind of enjoy the place.
Well, I absolutely use it too, Jeff. But when you look, the focus and the intention was on Google Glass. And this is a smart move because you look at all these products here on the table and Google Plus, these are copies and replicants of other products. Do you agree? They're trying to catch up. Finally, with Google Glass, they can get into a new market, a new type of product, and attract people like Gina to develop on top of it. It's a new product.
Well, I would argue that it's not Google Glass is not a product. Google Glass is like Siri and like Google's version. It is the next step past a surface, past a device. Mm-hmm. And so it's a new way to expand the use of the net beyond having to touch a device to do it. And that's a concept, and they're pushing that as a big strategic oomph. But among the things you're going to do is search and use Google Plus and other things too. I just don't think I wouldn't read too much into what they put on the agenda, especially considering how much they paid for that stunt around Google Glass.
But didn't they also say there is no? Who was it? Was it Larry who said there is no Google Plus? There's just Google.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's what it is. That could be confirming what Jeremiah is saying, which is, oh, let's not pay attention to the man behind the curtain. Or it could be saying, look, we have we're playing a much larger, broader game than just the Google Plus. You're thinking of it like Facebook, like a site that's by itself. But really, it's all Google and all new strategy. Features in Google.
Right. Jeremiah, I think you called it the connective tissue of the Google yes. Plus is.
Yes.
In your Plus post.
But that's not apparent yet. To most of us, it still looks like a separate product, doesn't it?
It does, but things are slowly converging, right? I mean, all the things we saw at I.O., first, Plus did have a big launch. Events was a huge Google Plus launch. No, it was day two, and I know that there were some issues we could talk about with the spam issues, the Scoble freakout. But Events was a big launch. The history API it's in developer preview. That remains to be seen what that will be. But I mean, the things that we saw, Glass to me is going to be it's going to be an input into Plus. Or yes. just into Google, yes. but mostly
and vice
Plus.
Versa. So let me, I want to recategorize the piece. Google Plus, or let me be specific, Leo, the Google profile is part of Google Plus, and it's going to permeate across all Google experiences, including Glass, including all these tablets and devices here. And they're going to collect the information from your friends and show it on your feed. And all of that information will be used to serve up ads in various locations. It's just all part of the strategy. So Google Plus is horizontal.
It's horizontal. Signal. Google Plus is a way, and I've argued this before, and Android are ways for Google, and I've said this in the show many times, so I apologize to those who've heard it, but it's a way for them to get us to generate signals about ourselves that they then use, and that's what makes it inherent into the strategy of the company.
Correct.
And so it's not that they're having a social network versus Facebook. They have a signal generator versus Facebook, or a few.
Agreed. Right, and all these products have enabled one another, right? Android it makes glass possible. Plus makes personalization possible. Google Now, which they launched in Jelly Bean, that I'm convinced that that's basically what's going to be running on Glass, right? Because it's aware of where you are and what is most interesting to you. So all these things are just things kind of enabling one another. But Plus is like you said. I mean, I think it's the connective tissue. I think it's going to be the social part of the people part of Google for going
well
forward.
Said,
it is now and it's going forward.
I think that's really well said. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I don't know that there's a big shift, but I just think it's just part of the reality now.
That we're starting to see the elephant. We just a bunch of people saw different parts, but now we're seeing the full elephant. Is that it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I want to see is, you know darn well that there's been a board retreat presentation by Larry Page that says, this is what I think the world's going to look like in 3 to 5 years.
That's the question. They need to aim at that target.
Well, that's what they are doing.
They need to skate to where the puck is going.
Parts of the elephant. Right. We're just seeing the parts of the elephant, as you just said, Leo. But he's got an elephant in mind. And, you know, it's being revealed to us bit by bit.
Yeah.
We'll see what it looks like.
And ultimately, isn't that what is required of Tim Cook, of Mark Zuckerberg, of Larry Page? If you are running a modern technology company, you're looking a few years ahead and saying, we think this is where it's going. And whoever picks the best wins, right?
Absolutely. And you do that same thing running this shop. You're looking at
the vision. Oh, God, I wish somebody told me. I was looking 3 years behind. Oh, God.
Wait, Leo, what would you have done differently?
I don't, I'm not that strategic. I wish I were that smart. These guys are actually smart people. I just sit here and go, hey, I don't know.
Oh, stop with that.
I'm not being phony on this. I don't feel that I have any idea. And when I do, I think every time I try to predict the future with technology, it's like wrong.
All right, but then go back. I mean, because I love you brought this up. Like, that's great. Go back for a second. I'll torture you for one more minute.
Well, I was lucky. I'm not saying I wasn't lucky a few years ago.
Right, but if go back, given the reality we have today, what different decisions would you knowing what you know now, would you have made three years ago?
No, I think we actually we've threaded the needle pretty well. But I wouldn't say that I have a crystal ball that's telling me what media is going to look like in 3 years. I shouldn't say that. You know what? This whole company is based on the notion that of a few things. Bandwidth will be high speed bandwidth will be ubiquitous and fair and affordable. That there won't be caps. That there won't be limitations. That people will have high speed internet. That people will be able to consume us in some sort of way that's basically in parity with traditional mainstream media, so that the distinction between NBC and Twit will start to dissolve. Mm. And most importantly, that audience will discover us. We have to work on our discoverability. That's not very good right now. We're working on that. And the second part of that is that the advertisers will, and I feel pretty good about all of these things, by the way, that advertisers will start to realize that this kind of media is as effective, if not more effective, that it is better to buy a small number of engaged viewers than a large number of disengaged viewers.
Specialized.
And I think that all of the trends are in the right direction. And one of the things that we're really working on, because everything else just kind of happens, is discoverability. That's a real challenge for new media. What am I going to do? Buy a billboard on 101? No. Am I going to appear on Live with Kelly? I've done that. Didn't do anything. So discoverability is a challenge. And what we've moved from is, because it's video, it's not searchable. And so I was all worried about search for years. And I didn't understand that search was going to get replaced by sharing. And so what's very apparent is that the new way of being discoverable is actually the old way. It's word of mouth sharing. And so what we need to be is not searchable. I was all worried about that. No, we have to be shareable. And so what we're really working on is a way that you could say to a friend, did you see that moment in that show? And then they'd be able to share it. If we can do that, I think then that's all we have to worry about for discoverability. Right. We have to be everywhere people are watching, of course, and we're doing that. We're building apps and, you know.
Gina, so you see the connective tissue at Google. Give me your – I want to hear Jeremy too, but Gina – first, what's your view of the elephant?
My view of the elephant is similar to what Jeremiah said, is that Google wants every single way. It wants to be part of every single experience that you have all day long, and it wants to be able to show you, enhance that experience with information and with advertisements. And in glass, you know, glass is part of that. I really want to talk about this thing a little bit because I absolutely love this.
Please do.
You've been begging. We will. We're going to take a break and then you can, okay?
But yeah, I think
let's finish this and then we'll.
We've been talking about this on the show for 2 years now. I mean, I think it's all about capturing signals as with the least amount of friction possible and then presenting, you know, an enhanced worldview via devices.
Value back. Yep.
It's so much fun. The game for us, which I think it's kind of like when I was a kid, I played a lot of chess, and it was fun to watch grandmasters play and try to imagine what they're doing and why. And why do they make that move? And that was really a fun challenge. And I feel like that's what we are doing when we watch people. It was felt like that with Steve Jobs. We watch people like Larry Page, we're watching, one hopes, if one is a stockholder, grandmasters play a game. In which they are seeing patterns and moves way ahead of us, and we're trying to understand. Now, you're an analyst. Is that what analysts do?
We do, but it's really hard to see that far ahead with these visionaries, and they have these R&D and think tanks, and they hire the best ideation teams in the world.
So they have more data than you do.
Yeah, and they also have a huge team. So in our analysis, we tend to look about 3 years out in disruptive technologies, and we can pretty much forecast a lot of those
really
things.
You feel pretty confident that what you talk about will happen?
Yeah, if you look at my track record, I've been
what's
very
next. Tell me what's next.
Well, I cover social really deep, and that's where we could talk, but
I wish I knew better. I have a team of zero.
Well, you see 3 years, even more. Come on.
So do you think these guys are grandmasters? They're pretty good.
Absolutely.
At this.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, again, look at the revenue model. I was looking at how much money they make and the percentage of it. It's 99% ads. All of this is about ads.
Do you think that that's a concern for Google?
No.
They're happy that – because, I mean, I think there's somewhat of a case to be made, for instance, that ad targeting doesn't work. That's a lot of what they're doing.
There is concern that the targeting is decreasing in accuracy. But as more information
Shouldn't
emerges,
it be increasing?
As they get more signals from your birthday and Google Plus and all those things, then it should be more targeted.
Yeah, it should be getting better.
That's why they have to get more signals.
But it moves past targeting to relationships. You know, and this is part of Bob Garfield's view of the chaos scenario, that when a company, when it, or add in Doc Searls, when you can have a direct relationship of value with a company, that replaces advertising.
Well, that's to me, that's the question. It's pretty clear banner ads don't work, right? It's pretty, do Google ads work? It's not true.
No,
they do work.
They do work, but it's a low guaranteed CTR. But they can promise numbers.
Okay.
It's low. It's very, very low.
If I were making my money selling ads, I'd be looking at new ways to reach consumers.
That's actually what my next research report's on. We're looking at how owned media, social media, and advertising is all coming together into a new form. We call this converged media.
Mm.
Facebook ads, Twitter ads, search ads, those are all examples of that.
So if you're a company, if you're Ford, you have to do a concerted effort along many lines to create a whole.
Let's talk about your sponsors, like stamps.com. Those ads that we'll see will start to have the members of the Twit community creating the content, sharing the content, distributing the content. It'll all be one. It'll be hard to tell who's media, who's a creative, and who's distributing. It's all together.
The real problem is that your customers don't like ads.
What you do is you don't turn it into an ad. When you converge all those things together, your friends help to create that ad.
You have to be smart about this because it can't look like you're manipulating. It can't look like you're marketing. It has to.
Friends are shills, right?
Yeah. Look what happened to Google with this. They paid that fee, the judgment on this. Your Robert Scoble just liked Ford. Why don't you? That's an ad with using Robert Scoble's name without his permission.
Right.
And they just paid some money in a settlement for that in the UK. You have to be careful.
I think as you learn the discoverability for Twit, that's a skill that you then bring to your advertisers. As you know, the skill of loyalty, it's a skill you have to find a way to transfer.
I used to spend a lot of energy trying to think of, trying to be the person who's thinking about that, right? And then I realized that agencies are so conservative that you have to let them think of it.
Yeah. True enough.
You can't say, hey, you know what the next thing is. You have to wait till they say, hey, you know what the next thing is, and say, oh, we could do that.
You know, this problem of discoverability, Leo, that you're describing that you have is the problem that Google wants to solve. And just as an aside, I meant to say, I just noticed, I don't know where I've been, that the Twit page on Google Plus is fantastic. And you post the post shows after they go up.
Please
and
follow us.
And I need to make an effort, and I've been kind of a slacker about this, about resharing that and saying, hey, you know, Twig is up, come watch it the day after. That's just not something I've been so good at. But you know, there are really good ways to do this and really bad ways to do this. Like I a car company, which I will not name, but a fancy car company offered me one of their newest models for a week and like $3,000. And they wanted me to drive the car for a week and blog about it and tweet about it. Hmm. You know, I had to agree to a certain number of blog posts or tweets. Or
ooh,
whatever,
that's
that week.
So gross.
And I said no.
Of course you.
I
was
did.
Was this
well,
because
I mean,
of your clout score? I've seen stories about how they award these things now out of clout scores.
Yeah, I'm sure that the clout score has something to do with it. I'm sure they use some sort of metric to figure out that I was, you know, influential rewards. In some way.
That's what that's what clout wants anyway. They certainly hope that that's what become the currency of the
clout rewards. You can find some of those in there.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gina. Go ahead. I have never written about cars. I'm not really into cars. It was a really badly targeted.
Right.
You know, I was just not the right person to ask. So there are really dumb ways to do this and really smart ways to do this.
On the other hand, if Google went to you and said, here's a Nexus 7, could you talk about it?
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute, they did.
I was first in line. I love this thing. It's the ultimate Android device. I have not touched my iPad in 2 weeks, and I love my iPad.
But that's not because Google gave you one at all. That's because you genuinely love it.
Well, they did give it to me at I.O., so I certainly should disclose that. But I'd buy three of these.
Right.
It's fantastic.
I bought one. I haven't got it yet. Apparently, 2 to 3 days.
One. I wish I had it.
Yeah, they say 2 to 3. The chat room said they talked to somebody at Google today and said the rep said 2 to 3 days. They start shipping.
It is so fast and so great, and Chrome is amazing. Like, I feel like, you know, when I was thinking about Google I.O. 2011, there were so many announcements that just nothing came out of them. There's not anything that we've been talking about now. But just what we were discussing a minute ago is that we're just starting to see the shape of things. Like this device, like seeing Chrome as the default browser and Google Now, and seeing Jelly Bean with Butter, like see it be so responsive, and seeing the Play Store start to come into its own, although it needs a lot more content in it to be really good. But to be at this point with Android where the app selection is great now, every single app that I'd ever want is now available for Android. It's like, I get it. Like, this is where they've been going with it. This is a great device. I love it.
Gina, I've been using the Kindle Fire. See, I brought them all. I got the Samsung Galaxy Tab. They're all the same form factor. The Nexus is lightest, and it feels good in your hand. The Fire, the UI is really clunky because it's not one that we
Well, it's also slow hardware. The Fire is an example of a compromised hardware to get that price down. And that's what's kind of neat about this is that they got that price point without, without compromising the hardware.
Right, exactly. Now, rumor has it that they're not making any money on this thing.
Right. I mean, it's not rumor. They said it.
They said it. I mean, this is an interface to the Play Store, right? They're making a bet that you're going to buy stuff from the Play Store on this thing. Right. And the default skin is very Play Store centric.
Yes, if you go home, I'll just show you real quickly. That's the home page, right? This is very Kindle Fire-like, where it's clear that that's the home page.
Amazon's losing money on the Fire, surely, too, right?
I'm sure they are, yeah.
The teardown cost for the Nexus 7, it's in the rundown, was $152.
Okay.
But marketing costs, right. In another episode.
Yeah, that's probably breaking even. Yeah.
But Gina,
yeah.
Have you used the Nexus in the sun?
Yeah, but so what?
I have.
Same with the iPad.
Yeah, it's kind of a dim screen, to be honest with you. It is an IPS display, right? So that would be very comparable to the iPad. It's not an OLED it's an IPS LCD display.
I thought Jeff was crazy for saying that he liked the small, that phablet thing.
No, this is the right size.
This is the right size. And you know, I read in bed a lot. Reading books and reading Instapaper in bed is very comfortable because it's one-handed. It's extremely light. It's just great. It's all the things that I didn't use about the iPad. I never use the iPad's back camera. This doesn't have it. It's Wi-Fi only, of course. It's so fast. I mean, I like to just swipe around on this thing because it's just so fast and responsive.
Jeremiah,
if you
had
a chart.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right. Jeremiah, you had the, in fact, you have it in front of you, the 7-inch Galaxy Tab. Yep. When I first got that, which was a year ago, wasn't it? I kind of fell in love with that size.
I did too.
Yeah, you but liked it, was, it too, Jeff. So how does this...
The problem was the software was fairly clunky at that stage. The typing was awful.
I hated Honeycomb. That was the real problem.
Was the real issue. It was not thought through as a tablet. It was rushed out.
How does this compare, do you think, Jeremiah?
I don't really use this. This is Charlene's, to be honest. We've been with the Fire for the most.
I'll tell you, one thing I like about the 7, Samsung tablet, is it has a camera on the back. This one does not.
Right.
Oddly enough.
Right. And that one is light. Feel this compared to the Fire.
Yeah, the Fire is a lot thicker.
It feels clunky and heavier. And heavy.
Although, I have to say, I was one of the few people who actually thought the Fire was a great product. But this now supersedes it for
it is.
Sure.
This
We're
is
watching
the, next generation.
The free movie that comes with it, the Transformers movie.
So if you're Amazon, what do you do now? Because they have rumors of new devices
You ship
out.
A new Kindle, and they better do it quick. The rumor is it won't be for a few months, which I think is probably...
So we should assume price points are going to drop. So especially when Christmas comes around, I don't know. Could these
$100?
Things get down? I'm saying sub-100.
If you get sub-100 on something like this, everybody buys one just as an impulse purchase, right?
Right.
You buy this. Yeah. It's sitting next to the People magazine at the grocery store, and you go, I'll take one of those two. And you just throw it in your cart. I mean, it gets to be that point, right?
Yeah, sub-100 for sure. I mean, Amazon still has a much better catalog than the Play Store.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But what you get with the Nexus 7 is you get the whole suite of Google apps, right. You know, Gmail, Calendar, Maps. I mean, that's
Is this
all,
why
all
Apple's doing a 7-inch?
Yeah, they have to get into this game. Absolutely.
They have to.
This is about media distribution.
This is
So we have three.
Charles
we have
Dickens.
Three media libraries, right? iTunes, Play, and Amazon.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to say, this is pretty awesome. Now,
so, Gina, if you were doing a chart of the Nexus 7 versus your iPad, which you loved.
This is fast.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling this to a friend. What you just like Android. You like the flow. You like feeling it. And I get all that, and I'm going to be the same way. But as a marketing message, what makes the Google the Nexus 7 competitive?
Honestly, I mean, for some $200 for something this powerful and great and small and light, it's a no-brainer. It's really the price. Like,
it's about price.
It's about price. Depending on who the friend is. My sister-in-law told me that she's in the market for a tablet, and I said, and this is a couple of weeks before Google I/O, and I said, just hang on to see what Google's going to release. She said, I want to spend about $200. People don't want to spend $500,
right?
You know, on a giant tablet. And I have a different relationship with the iPad. The iPad is this beautiful, you know, slab, but this thing, I feel like I just live with a little bit more. It's just lighter and it's got that kind of leathery feel. I feel like it's something that I kind of grab.
It's more casual.
I'm addicted now to my keyboard case for my iPad. I'm worried about withdrawal from that.
Yeah.
Can you hold it up? I want to see Jeff.
He's talking about this. This is the
Logitech.
Yeah, here you can play with it. This is the ultra thin.
It works for the 7.
It works with the 7. Any Bluetooth keyboard does.
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't fold over. And,
well, you know, how long before somebody makes a little?
Well, I think soon, but that's my one concern is that I think I need that because it does make me fluid. It makes me not fear having to type on it.
How do I start a Hangout? Can I start a Hangout? I want to use this camera. How do I start a Hangout?
Go to the sidebar. So click Home, Sidebar, Hangout.
Glad somebody knows how to use this.
Thanks,
oh, I don't know any of these people. Do you mind? Who should I start a hangout with?
Start one with me.
No. These aren't my friends.
Yeah, just... That's fine. Type in Chad, see if it happens.
No, because this is Jeremiah.
That's fine. My friends are your friends.
Okay.
Just don't...
Chad Johnson.
My ex-girlfriends, and we'll be okay.
They're not on here anyway.
No, they're not.
Ring on. What does this mean now? I just press start?
Yeah, I believe that...
Start. There it is.
Actually, Martin, are you in Google Plus?
Hey! Look at that! Waiting for Chad to join. Let's see. Here's the old redhead himself.
Hi, Chad. How are you? Good to see you.
Okay, here we go. One second.
Now, see, this is the point of the front-facing camera, and I guess they figured nobody's going to take pictures with this. Vince is probably not so far off.
That's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah.
How many pictures have you taken with the iPad?
Right. And it saves you money. It saves you probably, what, $20 on the cost?
I've taken lots of pictures of whiteboards.
With your
I've taken lots of pictures of white people, so there you go. Chad, don't worry about it. He's running to get a camera. It's okay. I'll call somebody. Really, what do you got there? What are you
Gina,
using?
Call Gina.
No, well, yeah, I could call Gina. Yeah.
See?
I don't know. Anyway, that's cool. That's cool.
Hmm. Oh, by the way, you saw there's a new feature for Hangouts that I think it's after you're off. It will give you a transcript of the whole thing.
A written transcript? Wow.
You mean voice to text?
Wow.
It automatically does that?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, I admit, you know, here's the thing. Okay, $200. But here's the significant difference between this and the Fire. It's fast. And that's the butter. There is a reason for Jelly Bean. That is noticeably. You feel the speed of that. Even compared to my quad-core Galaxy S3, it feels fast. We're going to take a break. We're talking with Jeremiah Ouyang, web strategist who's looking 3 years ahead of everybody else. Gina Trapani, who lives 3 years ahead of everybody else. And me and Jeff, who are living in the past.
For 3 hours.
Second time. we just wish Dallas should come back on the... Wait a minute, it did! Nothing from Jeff. I thought...
Oh, is he frozen? Oh, no, he's not frozen.
Oh, no, he's yawning.
He's in the past. No, I'm
Larry Hagman. Larry Hagman, Jeff. Larry Hagman. Linda Evans.
I was never into Dallas that much.
What do you think of Newsroom?
Oh, hate it.
Yeah, me too.
Hate it.
I'm very disappointed.
And despise it.
Yeah.
Sanctimonious. And now we people, my people.
You're
my people,
journalists.
Media, understand what he did to technology people.
Yes, and in fact, he's still doing it to technology people. He acts as if Twitter and email are like something new.
The truth
you
is
have a blog?
His vision for news is retrograde.
Yeah.
I want Uncle Walter back. I want him to explain the world. And in that first show, the structure he showed of having no script and staying just ahead is a menu for precisely how CNN screwed up the Supreme Court decision.
Yep.
Not thinking, not doing their work, not holding back. And it's just utter crap. And the speechifying is just so obnoxious.
It's pretty apparent that Sorkin hates women. I mean, all the women are ditzes in this.
I just sent, I just misused autocomplete in Outlook twice.
You see, you're a woman. Of course you did.
Oh,
and by the way, knock something over, would you?
No, seriously. I'm going to fall down on my heels while I'm running through the newsroom.
Yeah, because you're a woman. And I don't care if you were embedded in Iraq. I don't care if you're the greatest journalist ever. Please knock over that whiteboard.
I don't understand what an email alias is. It's so hard. I don't get it.
It's exactly what was in The Social Network that we didn't like about The Social Network. And now I'm terrified because this is the same guy who's writing the Steve Jobs biopic.
Oh,
that's going to be a disaster.
Well, he'll see Steve Jobs as the paragon that should be all of technology. The smart guy who knows best, who controls everything, who doesn't let these rabble-rousers decide what should happen in the world, who delivers something from a view of quality and really doesn't respect the world that much.
Yeah.
That's the way he's going to present Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Gina, knock something over for us. You dits, you.
I love to hear journalists talk about Newsnight. It's one of my favorite things to watch. People just get so angry about it. I love it. It's awesome.
I was all excited because I want to romanticize the newsroom and romanticize television. I like that. But this thing is just, oh, my God.
You know, and after I watched a couple of newsroom things, I went back and I watched part of Social Network.
Same
and
problem.
It made the preacher-frying, the worldview just come out even harder terms, in worse terms, as far as I'm concerned. I'm the odd one. But
no, I think once you catch on to Sorkin, because Sorkin's musical with language, but once you catch on to him, you realize, oh.
Bingo.
It's drama.
I've heard that tune somewhere before.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you love that show, it's a wonderful, wonderful show.
No, it's
I mean,
not.
We like Glee.
No,
what kind of taste do we have? What do we know?
It's true. It's true. I'll cop to that. It's true.
No, but this guy used to be a television reviewer. He's got credentials. He's a trained journalist.
But they gave Babylon 5 a bad review, and the geeks will never forgive me for that.
No, that's unforgivable.
And somebody in the chat room said, and I kind of agree, that he's giving Sorkin a pass. She will always give him a pass because of West Wing, which was a good show. Also,
it was, but you know what? I'll bet if you went back and
same problem.
Same problem?
Romanticizing BS. Sorkin took great pride in the fact that he never studied how the White House worked.
And Sorkin is an elitist.
Yeah.
That's the opposite of what I think the internet is about and journalism should be about.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And it's the same problem with, don't get me started, Leo. I know you're trying to get a sponsor in. It's the same problem with, what's his name? The Wire. David Simon.
I love him. You don't like him?
He's in his attitude toward newspapers and such. It's still that kind of elitist view of you need
season,
the mountaintop.
Season
to
two.
Talk to you.
Yeah, season two is all about the newsroom. That was kind of interesting, but you're probably right. It was a little bit His Gal Friday, as is newsroom. Totally His Gal Friday.
All right,
I keep waiting for Katharine Hepburn to show up. Spencer Tracy is the editor.
Which is Jill Abrams, the editor of the New York Times now. It's her favorite newspaper movie.
Oh, it's the greatest of all time.
She did
I saw that interview.
But talk about dated. That's when newspapers were still printed on trees. Yeah. Dead trees. I liked, you know, it's one thing I missed last week is I wish I could talk to Jeff about Newsroom. And now you've satisfied my...
You see, it got me started, Leo.
I knew I would.
Now we just have to talk about Louie, and it'll be complete. But we should do a sponsor.
Louie, I've been watching. I've catched up with season two. I'm watching season two because it's on Netflix. Has season three started?
Yeah, it's two episodes in.
He's so amazing.
He is.
There's a guy. There's a guy's guy. And now Louis C.K. we're talking about. He's selling his own tickets to kill some scalpers. He's killed 95% of all the scalping on his concert tickets.
Everything he's doing is going direct, and that's what the internet does.
It helps that he's Louis C.K. I mean, if I started my comedy career trying to sell tickets to, it wouldn't work. It helps.
I put up a link to David Weinberger on his blog, Hyperorg. Joho did a brilliant essay about how what Louis C.K. did with the scalpers and with the show itself was indicative of our opportunity to reset norms on the net around a simple rule, which is, pardon me for this, let's try not to be dicks.
And
it's really a brilliant piece because it talks about it. It actually also goes through the Weltanschauung of the worldview of Seinfeld and of Curb Your Enthusiasm and then of Louis C.K. And that Louis C.K.'s whole thing is, let's try not to be a dick.
Yeah.
And that's the opportunity the net gives us. And he just uses his direct relationship with his fans in his show and against scalpers as an example of doing just that. It's really a wonderful piece.
Just do the right thing.
Yeah.
Because
we have the chance to now. We have the chance to rethink these norms. We can screw it up, but our norms are all open for questioning. And they're...
And I think that's why, I don't know about you, Gina, but that's why I love Louis, the show Louis, because it's like a breath of fresh air. It's like, you know, you don't have to be on automatic. You could think about this for a minute, and then you can see it for the truth of it, as opposed to just kind of, as we mostly do in life, just kind of, well, that's how we've always done it, so we'll just keep doing it that way. Here's a chance to step back and say, oh, it's different. I like that. So already two episodes, huh?
Yeah, two episodes.
I won't see it till next year. What channel is that on?
FX.
FX, okay. I probably get that.
I don't think you can get it on my cable. I don't think it comes on the on-demand or on Hulu either, which is upsetting.
And if you're on Dish or DirecTV, they're probably turning it off right as we speak.
Yeah.
That's a mess. What the hell's going on there? Yeah, this is why the internet's going to win, because ultimately these stakeholders are just going to kill each other off. It's like dinosaurs. They're just going to fight.
No, the risk is they want to turn the internet into cable.
I know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they own it so they can.
Yeah.
Well, that's what these media platforms that we just talked about are part of that game.
Yeah, but the carriers are, unfortunately, Comcast, NBC, Verizon, and AT&T.
I mean, going through that network.
So. Yeah, we got to get around that. Let's build our own. Let's launch a satellite or something.
Verizon, which just filed an FCC complaint against their net neutrality power, arguing that Verizon has a First Amendment right to decide what goes on the internet and a Fourth Amendment property right to decide as well.
Well, this I don't think that's new. I think that's always been the contention that the FCC doesn't have standing is the point, right?
Right, but to argue that there's a First Amendment right on behalf of the cable provider to decide what does and does not go through its wires to our house, that it is not just a common carrier to the internet, it's not just access to the internet,
right,
that it is a newspaper. It gives the idea that the analogy it makes is that it is a newspaper. Verizon is a newspaper, and it decides what gets published.
There's a side effect to that that they're going to regret, which is that they're now responsible for what gets published.
Yes. But that's where Cisco comes in too, right? So Cisco is trying to put a technology in place to stop us from our own devilish instincts.
Well, the analog is YouTube. YouTube doesn't want to be responsible for what people put on there. They're a carrier.
Right.
But as soon as you say, well, no, we're a publisher, well, then YouTube is responsible for every single thing on every single page.
Yeah.
And that's difficult to do. Anyway, let me do an ad.
Sorry, Leo.
Half an hour. The only reason, I just need to. We need to pay the bills.
Oh, we love this.
We got lights. We got a table. Somebody's got to buy the table. We got a guy named Chad. He's $5 an hour, but I still got to pay him. Stuff like that.
That ain't right. Poor Chad.
No, he's more than $5. I hope he's pointing. I don't really know.
$5.50.
The way I get out of this, I wash my hands of it. I have no idea what he's paid. I'm sure it's a fair living wage. But I don't know. This show brought to you. No, it's fair, right?
Yeah, it's fair. I don't even know what it is.
I truly don't know what we pay you. I don't handle that. But, you know, if it's not, let me know, and I'll refer you to Lisa. This show is brought to you by, I don't know what Ford paid for this either, though, so it goes both ways, by Ford Motor Company. My dog is excited. Ozzy, you want to go for a ride in the Mustang? Come on, boy. Let's go for a ride in the Mustang. Ozzy loves Ford Sync, but you know what he's really excited about? He's really excited about the new AppLink API that lets developers write software that sits on top of the platform that is your vehicle. Your vehicle has sensors, it's got capabilities, it's got wireless, all this stuff. And now you get in your smartphone, and it's interfacing with it, and it suddenly your car is a part. It's like the ADK. It becomes a part of your environment. And actually, Ford's demonstrating this. They kind of have done a reference application, the My Ford mobile app. Now, if you want to take a look at it, you can go to an EV-certified Ford dealer and drive the new 2012 electric Focus, because this works with the electric vehicles only. And what will happen is, for instance, the app knows where your car is at all. You can find out about this at Ford.com/technology as well. Your app knows exactly where your car is. I love this. I'm going to show this picture. Where's my car? Why, it's right here. It also knows where the nearest plugs are if you want to charge it up. It also, you know, so you can get a map of all the charging stations in your area. You also get your state of charge. In fact, if the car's in the garage and you're in the living room, you can still use the app. It talks to the car, so you could say, charge now. Or, hey, I'm going to get in the car at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Could you make sure it's 72 degrees in the cabin, or on these hot days, you might want to say 65 degrees. And it uses the electricity to do this. This is available for BlackBerry, Android, and iOS. It's called the My Ford mobile app. So when you go to your EV-certified Ford dealer to test drive the 2012 Ford Focus Electric, bring your phone and download the app. And then you can see how it works. It's really sweet. They also have a My Ford mobile website where you can, you know, there's some gamification here. You could see who's saved the most CO2 today. How much money have you saved? I just think this is, remember, it's a demo. This is what they want. I mean, it's more than a demo. It's a working demo. But this is an example of what you can do when your car talks to your phone. The My Ford mobile app, just one of many amazing innovations you can find at Ford.com/technology or at your Ford dealer. Visit one today. Bring your phone and try it out. So if I have a clout score of 76...
Let's see your perks.
Let's see what my perks are.
By the way, can you tell... I don't belong to clout. I don't plan to. I don't know what my clout score is. I have no idea what my score is.
Well, just go to clout and you...
No, well, you have to sign up for it. I won't do it.
Well, you don't even want to give them any clout, so to speak.
We can look...
Okay, I can get 50 business cards from Moo. I could save up to... See, this is not... This is... You could show this. This is not anything I would... I could save rent on the runway. No, sorry, you're not eligible. How to be eligible? I need a clout score above 1.
I think you start at 20.
See, a lot of these aren't particularly good. Yeah, see, this perk is open to other influencers. Is this the one that was giving you a car? Acura ILX?
Oh, no.
No.
No, they Jaguar? They emailed me directly, so it wasn't, it didn't see, they didn't mention clout, but I imagine that.
But this is like, you know, a pay per post. This is trying to buy the
It's horrible.
Because they supposedly have clout.
Here's what you have to say if you drive a this Acura. I was given a free product or sample because I'm a clout influencer. I was under no obligation to review the sample or talk about this company. I get no additional benefits for talking about the product or company.
So one of the posts I did that drew a lot of attention is when you combine clout with Google Glass and you can go about the world.
That's Damon. That's straight out of Daniel Suarez, where you have your reputation score floating above your head.
Exactly. And you can go to a party and then people are going to...
Oh, he's got a lot of clout.
Right.
Hey, you're a nice guy.
Right. I just envision that as Robert Scoble's worldview.
Yes, he wishes. He wishes clout would give you something.
I say that lovingly, Robert. Love it.
No, he would agree with you.
And I think when that happens, you can people with high clout scores will also get discounts, special treatments, free products.
See, here's what's wrong about that. And the example that I have at hand that's very easy is I had absolutely no clout, no influence whatsoever.
You have 65.
In the PC market, the laptop market, when I complained about my Dell computer, what had influence was my message. And there was no way to predict that this guy named Jarvis, who comes on kvetches with dirty words about his computer, was going to start a storm because the message was at the right time. Yeah, the fact that I had some people following me helped it spread a little easier. But I was zero clout in that category.
But that
what's your Twitter handle, Jeff?
Clout.
Jeff Jarvis.
All right.
That was because you identified that Google products and the support had an issue. You were the voice of the people. It didn't have to do with direct influence.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, Jeremy, is that the notion of clout, that someone is an influencer and is predictable as such, is wrong, because the person who supposedly has influence can say something that doesn't resonate. The person who has zero influence can say something that resonates, and that's what happened.
But also, when that happened, was it 2006, I think I read you do that or something like that, there were very few people blogging compared to the amount of people on social now. Now we have to have identifiers because... everybody's doing it. The adoption rates in social networking.
Yeah, but I'm still trying to say I'm still saying that the idea that you can measure someone's clout as a predictor of their influence is fallacious.
No, I agree. Okay, so clout is great for absolute value, but when you look at the relative value, which is specific topics, like obviously media, journalism, advertising, we go to you. But if it's PC computers, perhaps
But isn't that the problem with authority in general is, in fact, I remember this from talking to, who was it, Mr. Twitter was the guy who did this originally. And he said, the problem is I have a lot of authority to my kids and my parents. I might have zero authority to you. I have a lot of authority when I talk about Twit, but I might have zero authority when I talk about tires. So how do you measure authority? And clout is a very brute force way to do that. I think that's why people have problems.
There's a number. There's Peer Index. There's so many of these. I mean, Edelman has built their own. But they do put in some keywords, and you can tag people. And people have been saying you're like influential at raspberries and blueberries and ranches. So it's not perfect.
Yeah.
But people glom onto numbers. And by the way, the number of brands that use clout
is interesting.
Very, very, very high. Because it's embedded in Radian 6 and a number of social monitoring tools.
So they kind of, they've bought into it.
They're buying a crock.
That's what I think.
I think what's more interesting is who the influencers are listening to.
Oh,
Like I've been really kind of obsessed with the idea of like, if you're not an influencer by its clout's measure or whatever, you know, if you don't have a ton of followers, but you have relationships with people maybe who do, you know, the car company that comes to me and says, you should drive our car around and here we'll give you money to talk about it. That's one thing. But if someone I respect and admire, Leo asked me to do, you know, to do something or try something, like I'm going to listen to him. And I think that's kind of the next step here is like, how do we get people who are not, you know, influential? And I'm using that term, you know, however you measure that. Who do they care about and who are they listening to? Because the people who have tons of followers and a high clout score, like they're just, you know, they're blocked off. Half of them can't answer their email or can't, you know, sort through all their Twitter mentions or whatever. and it's impossible to get to them.
So here's the thing, and I advise a lot of brands on how to deal with social influencers, and I say, should you treat people like Leo with high cloud scores higher than other people? And they're like, no way, that's horrible. That teaches a bad behavior. And I say, well, do you treat customers with high net value differently? And they go, oh, yes, we do.
Sure.
It's the same thing.
Yep. Those of us who are better looking and richer than others should get more clout. Lady Gaga, how do you think she's going to run her social network, Little Monsters? Are you a member, Gina, Little Monsters? Are you a Little Monster?
I'm a Little Monster.
I thought you might be.
You are?
Really?
Wait. You really are?
I really am. I really am.
How did I know?
So I'll admit, I didn't know about it until I saw it in the rundown, but I signed up instantly. I was like, I was scanning our story rundown, and I was like, Lady Gaga's new social network. And signed in instantly.
Oh, so it's at a beta. Tell me what it looks like. Let's do it.
It looks a lot like Pinterest. Interestingly, you can sign in with either your Facebook or your Twitter account. And then it asks you for a couple little more information, your birthday, maybe your name.
What's the address?
It's littlemonsters.com.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's what she calls her fans, is Little Monsters.
Right. That's what she calls her fans. And the primary UI looks very similar to Pinterest in that it's like it's photo based. And, Gaga's your friend, by default. Oh, so you
Tom.
Kind of Jeez, when you
Tom
sign Anderson. In, you see. Right. Yeah. Right. Gaga is the upgraded Tom. And you just see a lot of images from Gaga, which is, as a fan, that's what I want. But there's a chat on the sidebar. And it looks cool. I don't know that I'm going to spend a lot of time here because it's very Gaga-centric.
Is it media consumption or is it for social interaction? What are you using it for?
It seems like I only signed up a few hours ago, so I haven't spent a lot of time. But seems like this is for fans to meet one another and chat. So there's live chat on the sidebar, and then there's you can share links and images, a lot of stuff about sort of all of Gaga's
so
things,
if this
bullying
works
and fashion.
If this works, the other artists are going to do this.
That's the question.
This replaces, somebody's going to white label this, and this replaces MySpace or Ning.
This probably was the idea behind Ning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like this, right.
Create your own social network.
She owns this versus going through a platform.
Right.
And so this could become white label.
This isn't so very different from what you might create on a MySpace page either, right? I mean...
Mm-hmm. Formerly known as,
it's very much like Pinterest. That's interesting. How
it does look like Pinterest, but there's like the gay monsters group, there's like the Brazilian monsters group, and you can click on one of those in the right sidebar, and you can start to chat.
This is really a lifestyle social site.
Yeah.
So I wonder, is this the next big thing for Gaga, for artists?
Yeah. For Gaga,
you have to
fans.
Have massive following for this to work.
She does.
Yeah,
she does. Yeah.
But you have to gather around. You have to gather around something common. That's what she's not just music. It's very Glee-like, right? It's losers like us.
It's an affinity group.
Yeah. It's fashion. It's culture. Right. It's dance. I mean, it's
lifestyle.
It's affirmation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It's support because her anti-bullying efforts. I mean, Gaga is a whole thing. Chrome. She does the Chrome commercials.
So, right. I'm trying to think for somebody like me, what would be, if there's anything that would be compelling enough. I mean, I'm too old for to be a band. I guess if you were a fan of the 49ers, there's people who would do that.
But you can imagine something like this, like Twit having its own. I'm not suggesting that Twit build its own social network, but you can imagine sort of a personalized site. Like this for Twit?
Well, we've got a forum. We've had mm-hmm. things kind of like this.
Mm-hmm. The chat room is that.
Isn't this really just a forum, more modern with more media features? But really, ultimately, it's a forum, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's a community. It's not a forum.
Well,
a forum is a community.
A forum is a tool for
a community. Community are groups of people.
I think Leo's saying it's a forum for the community here.
Sure.
He's a convener of people who have similar geeky interests.
What is? I don't even know what our forum is. Is it twitcommons.twit.tv? Does anybody know?
I haven't used it. Army?
No, it's commons.twit. I think it's commons.twit.tv. Let me see. No, I don't even know. Ben Fransky, our moderator, was here. He said, you guys don't have a link on the front page anymore. It's towncommons.twit.tv. And this is actually used to be very active. If we made this more Pinteresty, it would be very similar to what Lady Gaga's doing, right?
More Pinteresty.
People come here for tech help mostly. That's where most of the posts are. But we could do this. We could be more active, certainly.
And to Jeremy's point, if it's truly a community, it doesn't need you. It'll live on its own. You can add value.
Well, this does. It's got 21,000 registered members. It's got 19,000 posts.
Wow. So just about every single person has posted something.
And it's completely neglected. I'm sorry to say. I thought, foolish me, forums were dead. I thought, oh, nobody uses forums anymore. And then Gaga comes along, and that's really just a forum. I'm telling you. That's what that is.
Media sharing. I don't think that's...
Yeah, well, it's dressed sharing, up. Yeah. Well, yeah. What do people do a lot of on forums? Put pictures.
Yeah.
Look at... What is it? B/B? It's pictures. 4chan is a forum. It's pictures. Reddit's a forum. We're going to do subreddits.
Oh, cool.
For all of our shows. In fact, this show will have has a subreddit. Oh, okay. We just haven't started promoting it. When should I start promoting that, Chad?
Let me hear back from Greg.
You know what we're looking for this is eventually we will want community moderators for
Absolutely.
All of this. So if you love Twig or Twit or MacBreak Weekly, TNT already has a subreddit. We would love it if you'd get and you're a Redditor. You're really into Reddit and you know how to use all this stuff. We would love to get you involved. So just think about that. I think these have never gone away, but they are. And so when I look at what Gaga's doing, I go, oh, that's, you know, it's like I was a member of The Well in 1984.
Which is for sale now.
Now for sale, yes.
Yeah, sad to say.
Why don't you buy it, Leo? $10.
Why don't you buy it?
How much? Well, because I don't want it. What would I do with it? It's a text. It's a forum. But The Well, which was a kind of the prototypical forum in the 80s, mid-80s, started by Stuart Brand of the Whole Earth Catalog. In fact, it stands for Whole Earth Electronic Link. Was the first place I experienced the internet. You could drop through the bottom of the Well user interface to a command line, and then you could run Lynx or Gopher or Archie and Veronica, and that's how I saw the internet the first time. So, in other words, this has been around for a while.
People don't change, just the tools and technology.
Yeah, it's more visual than it was.
It's true. This is just more visual, which makes sense for Gaga fans.
Yeah, we could make ours more visual. Somebody should write some Pinterest-style forum software, then we'd use it.
Ning, you know, is now part of Glam.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And full disclosure is I've been an advisor to Glam, and I'm friendly with them.
Is Glam like fab and fancy? What is Glam?
No, Glam is now larger than AOL. It has 243 million unique users last month.
Glam Media?
Glam Media. Glam is basically a network and platform started for women. Now it has men and other topics. But it is, rather than the old model of the portal or the old model of a content company, Glam is an enabling network for a couple thousand sites.
So this is like Linkin Park is doing essentially what Gaga's doing.
Right. So you could use Ning.
Using their platform.
The Twitter, I'm sure I'll be happy to introduce you to them. They have all kinds of great tools for creators now. Huh. That's what they do.
Hey, Jeff, how do you compare Glam Media to like Federated Media or other types of influencer networks?
It started as an ad network, but it has a lot more tools, so it enables people to create a lot of things, and they have very high-end ad sales. They only take high-end brand ads. And again, full disclosure is that I became friendly with Samir Arora, who's the CEO, because I believe in the network model, and it was pretty much the only large substantiation of that model at scale.
Well, what about demand media?
No, demand's not a network at all. Demand pays people to go write crap.
This is the opposite, the other way around, where you've got content, you're a creator, you need... So Dr. Phil is using this, drphil.com. Right. It looks like a Dr. Phil website.
It is his site fully. What Glam does is enable them with ad sales and promotion and some technology. And so it's a network to enable the sites that are on it to succeed.
So it's a media platform. Wow. It's a media platform with monetization and engagement tools ready to go.
Yes.
There's this new company. Check it out. I just met with them yesterday. Disclosure, they're a client now. This Moment. And they allow companies to build these types of things across social networks and even on HTML pages. So I'm seeing this trend, the white labeling trend, starting to emerge now too, like this. So there's going to be a lot of permutations of this.
So does Glam... Now, see, these are kind of cheap ads up at the top here. These look like almost Google ads.
Well, Glam itself... Oh, I see. Oh, that's. I thought they usually didn't allow you to do that kind of stuff. They sell just, as far as I know, they sell just branded ads. I don't know that they control everything
so
on every site.
Do you get this site for free and then you do an ad share?
No,
with
they
Glam?
They invite you in. They invite you in.
They invite you in.
So yeah, so it's selective.
So after spending $100,000 on our Twitch site, I'm starting to think maybe this would have been a smart move.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And Jeff, how do you think this is different than a branded YouTube experience or a Facebook experience? Just because you can control.
Well, it's unique. I mean, look at these. None of these look like they're branded anything.
So we're just talking experience here.
Yeah. The Glam is not a brand. They thought it was going to be originally, but it's really not. It's an enabling company behind
infrastructure.
2,000 brands.
And I notice it doesn't say Glam.
No.
Well, here it is at the bottom. GlamHealthAndWellnessBliss.com.
Yeah. So they have Bliss, which is health. They have Glam.
So it has a cross link to another Glam site. That's it. I mean, you wouldn't know this is
what's
Glam.
What's fascinating, 5 years ago, it started, and within less than 2 years, it was larger than iVillage, which was the queen of women's sites. And now it's larger than AOL.
That's
and
kind of.
It did it by building a network, 244 million uniques. Like, it's really, I'm just shocked that more haven't seen this network. So if I were a newspaper company, a magazine company, Conde Nast or Hearst or those kind of places, this is what they should have been building. They could have 1,000 brands, and I've said it to all those companies.
Yeah, but this is a distributed model. Traditional media companies, and you know best, only think centralized and centralized monetization.
Precisely, Jeremy.
Does that mean so they don't really want to give up any power to Glam? Is that it?
You want to hold editorial tight.
Yeah.
You want to hold advertising network tight.
And yet this relationship would be probably to everyone's benefit.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think I was operating out of that kind of mistake.
I've gone to sessions with Glam bloggers, and they don't compete with each other. They recognize that ships rise in the tide, and they link to each other, and they all benefit. I didn't mean to.
Can you introduce me to Glam? I'd like to meet them.
You bet. You bet. Samir Arora is a great character. He's in the San Francisco area.
I think I blew it.
He's an ex-Apple exec.
Well, you know, we literally spent nearly $100,000 on twit.tv and the new tech guy site, which is about to launch also. And it's that centralized model where we have the servers, we control it. We spend thousands of dollars a month running it. And this would probably make us a hell of a lot more money.
Yeah, but
they'd
these
be out there selling ads
yours.
For you.
The thing is, these ads, I don't...
We control the ads.
Right. See, so that you would be giving up monetization options in order to reduce maintenance costs.
So the question is,
can you make more than 100K in your network at long-term value?
Yes.
So the question is, do we join or build? The answer is, when do we do it? How do we do it? Yes, we do both. You're all over the social web, too.
I don't get it.
So there's three levels, right? There's you have your .com or...
I feel like an idiot savant who just stumbled into this world.
Come on, no.
And I don't understand any of it. And then they get people like you and Jeremiah, and then they explain this to me, and then I go, oh.
But you specialize in selling video ads in a certain way.
The truth is, my only interest is in creating a network that helps people understand technology and hanging out with smart people and talking about technology. And the only reason we do any monetization or anything else is to subsidize that. If I could do this and I haven't figured out how to, I don't know. I am a content guy who's kind of trying to thread his way through this new media universe, which is crazy.
I feel like that
guy in Newsroom. I have a blog?
Check the fax machine.
Where's the fax machine?
Check the fax machine.
Let me just knock Gina over by accident. Whoa!
Hey!
The woman was embedded in Iraq, in Afghanistan, Pulitzer Prize winner, wounded, but for some reason she can't figure out that an acronym can't begin with is. So maybe people get stupid when they...
Oh, God, that acronym.
They got on TV.
No, Aaron has a deep-rooted hatred for women, and for technology. It's now become apparent.
And I would argue, populism and democracy.
And democracy. Oh, he's absolutely an elitist. As am I, but I try to hide it.
In a good way.
When me and my buddies get together at the Bohemian Grove, we often laugh at you proletarians. Somebody asked me on Twitter, are you going to the Grove? I said, what? I think they assume that I am a media elite. Yeah, me and George Shultz were like this. Let us take a break. I'll tell you what I'm excited about. Jeff's going to have a number. Gina's going to have a tip. I'm going to have a tool. Jeremiah, I don't know what, in just a bit. But first, I'm going to tell you about how a great little company is changing the mobile phone space. I love this kind of a story. Elliot Noss, who heads Two Cows, does Hover.com, which has really kind of created a new way to do domain registry. He's trying to do the same thing with Ting. I love this. The idea is you get billing clarity. You know exactly what you're getting and what you're paying for. You get great usability, a great interface, big savings at Ting, T-I-N-G.com. This is a phone company. They're on the Sprint network. So if Sprint works well for you, then Ting will work great for you. And I invite you to go to ting.com/twig and try the savings calculator. So you'll bring your phone bill to that, and then you can say what your phone bill is and then compare it to the Ting plans. Now, here's what I like. These plans are just serving suggestions, and they are in no way binding. So you say, well, but I'll give you an idea of how it works. I'm going to have, let's say this is a family of four. We've got four phones, and I'll show you where the phones are in a bit. And we're going to, as a family, on this plan, use 1,000 minutes, 4,000 text messages, and 3 gigabytes of data a month. And that is a total of, when you add it all up, $113 for that family of four. Four phones, everything. Here's the beauty part. Use less, they give you a rebate. Use more, they charge you at the same rate. There's no penalty. This is the rate. You charged or credited based on your actual usage without penalties. You get free voicemail, picture and video messaging, three-way calling, caller ID, tethering, hotspotting, and a lot more. It is a brilliant... This is how it should be. Now, let's look at the devices. Android, of course, and a good variety of devices, including the Samsung Galaxy S2. The 4G, because it's using the Sprint 4G network, and other feature phones as well. You even have data devices. They have the Sierra wireless card 3G or the Huawei Express. So you buy these devices. You're not paying a subsidized price. You own it. They're unlocked. And now you're tinging. Ting.com/twig. Find out how much you would save right now. I think you'll be very impressed. Easy access to your billing information. In fact, for a business, it's great because you could see exactly how the phones are being used. You get complete controls over the features. There's lots of help content there. And you pay for exactly what you use with no premiums and no penalties. It's just flat. I highly recommend it. Want you to give it a try. They've got this is a modern company. They're on Twitter. They do customer support through Twitter. Their blog. They post release notes. It's a bunch of geeks. And everything from the Sanyo Zio phone at $105, they don't take ducks, only bucks, to the Motorola Photon, $545, and the Galaxy S2's in there too. I'm sure they'll have the S3 any day now. It's ting.com/twig. Gina Trapani, your tip of the week.
Twitter rolled out a couple of changes to their search function, which I kind of dig.
Good.
If you go to Twitter search and you type in, say you type in newsroom, it will autocomplete for you names and topics. And in your search results, that's pretty cool. That's okay. But the thing I think I'm most excited about is that when you're looking at search results, you can see the top tweets or you can see all tweets. That's always been. But now there's a new link, tweets from people you follow.
I like that.
I like that a lot. So now it's not all tweets from people you follow over all time. It's only like the last week of tweets because, you know, Twitter, they're not in the archiving business. They're in the tweets of the moment business. But still really, really useful. So if you want to find out what your friends are saying about something that's happening right this minute, really neat new feature. People you follow, tweets from people you follow in Twitter search results.
Very cool.
I don't think this is rolled out to the Twitter clients yet on mobile phones, but I believe that it's supposed to in the coming weeks.
What do you think of the fact that Twitter has basically intimated that they are not, that the third parties are out? Twitter's really making some, Dick Costello's making some big changes right now at Twitter. This is the beginning, this new search. But I think there are a lot of people who say, hey, watch, there, in fact, I saw an article that said, Twitter, just remember MySpace and Dig. You got to consider your community.
Yeah, you've defended them in the past, Gina. I've always tried to push you on the developer view that they're kind of screwing the developers. You still defend them?
Twitter wants developers not to build third-party apps. They want developers to build into Twitter, like Twitter as a platform. So Twitter wants you to be able to expand the tweet and see different kinds of content inside that tweet on the Twitter website. So I think that Twitter's announcements to developers haven't been the best handled. I think that a lot of people have been sort of kind of rightfully upset, saying like, hey, we helped, you know, make this platform what it is, and now you're telling us to back off and stop, you know, stop making clients. But they didn't really say anything. You know, they said stop making clients a year ago. And said, start kind of doing, innovating, doing things that we can't do, you know, something, you know, doing new stuff.
But then
and
they turned off LinkedIn.
Well, right.
And
well,
then they said, we're going to have stricter guidelines.
And they launched
right.
the
saying,
Twitter
they're
card
saying, don't
feature.
Recreate the experience that you get on the Twitter website. So don't show your home timeline, which is what LinkedIn was doing. They were showing that your, you know,
right.
tweets. So I'm not strongly defending Twitter. I'm not completely offended in turn. I'm cautiously optimistic that Twitter is encouraging innovation in new areas. When they turn off ThinkUp, I'll change my tune.
Yeah. Well, and this is what it seems to be coming down to. There are many of us, and I'm sure you're in this camp, who think of Twitter as the dial tone, as the carrier, as the signal. Mm. And Twitter apparently increasingly is considering itself as a content company. Like,
yeah, Twitter decided that Twitter's not the pipes, right? They want to be the media company.
Right. Except that it's our content that we made that we're putting on Twitter.
But you get to use it for free. That's why they say that. So the product they launched was the Twitter card, which is taking the media elements, the whole tweet and the embedded media, maybe even your videos and pictures, Leo, and that can be embedded other places. So they are building media features. This is part of the game. Then obviously what happens on top of that is potential advertising.
So Twitter cards are like kind of longer posts, but they can contain media experiences. So you put HTML in your web pages, and then when somebody tweets a link to your content, the card comes from your page onto the tweet.
The content that you tweeted about appears in the card, as I understand it. So it's like in a, yeah, there you go.
Here's an example from the Twitter developer site. So Richard Henry, as an example, said there's a whole lot of people, and then posted a link to the New York Times. And then what you get on the Twitter website, and presumably at some point
on your site,
Twitter clients, is a newsreader synopsis with an image.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter has to compete with Facebook and Google Plus, which supports like rich media inside posts.
Right.
And you can see this now, right now, if you look at a tweet with an Instagram link or a Flickr link, if you expand that tweet on the Twitter website, it will show you the image in line, and they want to expand that to include different kinds of content.
That's one more thing that I got to do. I got to send a note now to our developers, and say, hey, what are we doing about this?
Likely it's the same markup that would work on Facebook and Google Plus, Leo. So
I hope it is.
It shouldn't be too expensive for you.
Okay. Glenn, you're going to get an email. Crikey. It's hard to keep up with all of this stuff. Thank you, Gina Trapani. Twitter search, take a look. Our number of the week.
22%. Megan Garber wrote a piece on Atlantic Online and said that a researcher named Matthew Burke found that 22% of web pages contain Facebook URLs.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing. Now, I don't get the numbers, because it then says the 242 million of 1.3 billion. And I would think there'd be more than those number of pages. But in any case, that means that Facebook has managed to embed itself into the web. Then it says that there are 7.5% of websites he analyzed use Facebook's open graph tags in their pages. So when it comes to signal generation, when it comes to understanding the web and understanding more about it, one starts to wonder who understands not just people better, but the web better, Google or Facebook. They've managed to provide functionality that sites are using. They've the like, the fact that people are linking to their friends' stuff, they're linking to their own stuff, all of those things, the sign-in structure, all of those things start to make tentacles for Facebook out into the world of the web.
I wonder how this compares to Google Analytics code.
Mm. I'm really curious, too. And one thing I don't understand about this is it says that there are more than 471 million total Facebook URLs. Well, there's more Facebook people than that. There's more Facebook stuff than that. So I don't understand that. And then he says, of 500 hard-coded links to Facebook, writes Megan, only 3.5 or 0.7% are unique. I don't understand that either. So I don't really get this often, don't when I say these things. But I thought I'd throw it out there because I found it interesting at least.
My tool is something I found, as usual, in Lifehacker. They are so good at Android stuff. I'm so jealous. I don't have Jelly Bean, so I don't have Google Now, and I really want Google Now. That looks, despite the creepy factor we talked about, looks great because it kind of knows what you're interested in and it's supply. Have you been using Now on?
Nope.
You
not
use
yet.
An iPhone?
Yep.
Well, maybe someday I'll get Jelly Bean on one of my phones. Meanwhile, I'm using something called Bounce GPS Calendar Beta. This is a very interesting idea. You know, the kids say, I know this because I have a kid. When they want to leave, they go, let's bounce. We're bouncing out of here. Do you ever say that, Gina?
I'm actually a little too old for that one.
Yeah, I'm going to bounce.
I know what
it means. You've heard people say I'm going to bounce.
Let's bounce.
So here's my problem. I'm always late for everything, as you may have noticed. I'm late right now. We were supposed to start triangulation 8 minutes ago. That's okay. We're going to. Any minute now, Nolan Bushnell will be on this set. But I know Nicole. So this is why you're going to like it that I got this program, except it doesn't help with this. Bounce knows where you are, knows where you're going from your calendar, and lets you know ahead of time. It's time to leave if you want to get there on time. Is that wild?
That's cool.
So it uses Google Calendar or Microsoft Exchange, provides a reminder before you need to leave. You can configure it. So I can say, let me know 30 minutes for each trip. Add 10 minutes to my travel time or less or more. It runs in the background. It doesn't have really much of an interface. But what you'll want to do on your calendar is put addresses for all of your stuff. And then Bounce will tell you 10 minutes before you have to be somewhere. You got to leave now. Wild app. It's free. And they say it's going to receive frequent updates that eventually they want to. It's Google. This is one of the features of Google Now, appointment reminders. But eventually they're going to do a lot more. It does use your GPS, your calendar, and by the way, it checks traffic data so that it will add some time if the traffic is bad. Now, unfortunately, my commute is just to the other side of the studio, so.
Oh.
Not going to be much help for
what
that.
What I do for you.
An hour and a half, really, Jeff?
Minimum.
Wow.
Minimum.
Gosh. And that's so you can live in the country?
The kids got addicted to oxygen. What can I say?
Damn. when they grow out of that, are you going to move back to the city?
Then I got my wife got addicted to it, too. So,
yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Gina. Great to have you. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. That's his blog where he writes, and he made an extra effort to be here for the show today. Thank you.
Always.
I really appreciate that. I'm very grateful. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org. And, of course, she writes Think Up, the amazing Twitter application. And with any luck, she'll continue to be able to do that for years to come at thinkupapp.com.
Great to be here.
Nice
so good to see you guys.
It's good to be back, isn't it? Yep.
Yeah, great to be back.
Yay. And thanks to Jeremiah Ouyang for bringing all his Google I.O. swag.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What is this, a Clié?
Yeah, look at that. I dug out that. But I was cleaning
Holy
out my closet.
Cow.
And it's got Palm OS on it. I don't even know if I can charge
this
it.
This was my favorite Palm device, actually. Then Sony got out of the business, but... this was a great...
That's before, the touch really worked, and you'd actually have to use a stylus.
And, in fact, I had I lent this to a friend, and I got it back, and it was all scratched up. And I said, what happened? She said, I was playing Bejeweled. And there were lines in the grid of Bejeweled all over it. But so somewhere I have a scratched-up Sony Clié. You brought some fun stuff for us.
Cool.
Here. We've come a long way, baby. You can find Jeremiah everywhere at Joe Yang, right? Jowyang, or at web-strategist.com. Good to see you.
Thanks, man.
That shirt, awesome. Buzz shirt. That's not a Paul. Ooh, is that a... That's not one of those watches.
No, this is not the Pebble. This is a Nixon.
Oh, cool. I like Nixon. Those are skater watches. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We do This Week in Google when Leo shows up. 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC on Wednesdays. But you can always get the on-demand version after the fact at twit.tv or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated. Stay tuned. In just a minute, as soon as I walk over, we're gonna get Nolan Bushnell on Triangulation. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on Twig.